Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's cast, Good Lieutenants Make Good Captains, Chapter 1, Part 1. The questions this cast answers are, what are the intangibles of getting promoted? What do bosses look for to decide who gets promoted? And how can I improve the perception of my leadership abilities? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
It may sound weird to say this, but if you're thinking about Christmas gifts, one of the things that I've gotten for people in the last couple of years is a personal license to our website. Specifically, when I did it, it was for some friends who were new managers who kept asking me questions, and I sent them show notes a few times and then realized, you know what, I could just solve this problem and give them a license. And if you are looking for Christmas gifts for your professional friends and maybe looking also to kind of warm up your network and help some people out, a lot of people's jobs are changing right now. The market is intense, and it might be that someone you know could use a personal license for the next step of their career, and it's just about the holiday time. So I just wanted to put that out there. If you want a personal license, it comes with all the show notes. It comes with some newsletters from us, and honestly, a lot of support as well for those new managers who are just starting and maybe asking you a lot of questions, and you could kind of help them ask those questions of us instead. So if you're looking for a personal license or you're looking to gift a personal license, you can come to the website and grab one of those and help a friend and also maybe yourself.
We've talked tons over the years about getting promoted. How do you get promoted? What does it take to get promoted? What kind of activities can we engage in order to be seen as someone who should get promoted? And we've repeatedly made the case that results are always a manager and or individual contributor's number one priority. But we also agree that there are a lot of other skills, a lot of other intangibles that can truly make a difference in terms of one's ability to be seen as an individual that is worthy of promotion. So in our series, this being chapter one of that, Good Lieutenants Make Good Captains, we've captured the majority of those intangible behaviors that can help us be promoted.
It's interesting because this week I actually got a question about this from someone. I was at SWERI, Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, and I had someone ask about getting promoted. They'd kind of received some hints that maybe they were on the list of, you know, the next people who are going to get moved up a level. And we had already talked about our podcast, The Rule of 150%. I think there are a lot of people who listen who are really great at achieving their results. And if you're one of those people and you're not sure about the other things, I think this is really helpful. Another cast that the irony here is that one of our very first casts was also, actually the very first cast, was also about kind of those intangibles around getting promoted. So I think it's common that the people who listen to us are pretty focused, they're driven, they are already hitting their numbers, making their metrics. And I'm excited that we're going to help people with those other pieces. Because once you have that in place, then you know, you got to work on the next thing, the next level. And this is another one of those casts that always makes me think, this is what those like top performer type people do. You know, this isn't something that regular employee people, regular managers do. This is next level. This is not amateur hour. This is, here's what's next. Here's how to get there. And I'm just excited that we're doing that kind of content for people who are already hitting their numbers.
Yeah, I agree.
So today in this cast, we're going to cover captains and lieutenants.
Mm-hmm.
Know your boss's goals, know your boss's behaviors, know your boss's friends and enemies.
Yes.
Relationships.
Right. I know. It's all about relationships. All of the non-results things are relationship things, which shouldn't be a surprise to anybody listening to this podcast right now.
Yeah. Or anyone who's been with us for a while.
Yeah, exactly. For any number of times. This can be podcast two. And you're like, yeah, no, that sounds right. That mm-hmm. tracks.
Checks out.
To what I'm used to. Mm-hmm. So let's start our conversation because I don't want to turn folks away immediately. Note, gang, when we're using the terms captains and lieutenants, we're not using the terms in the military sense. In fact, the first definition in the dictionary, you can open up the dictionary now if you'd like, of each of these terms, that is, captains and lieutenants, doesn't refer to their military origins whatsoever. A captain is one who's a chief or a leader, and a lieutenant is someone who's subordinate to the leader but acts on their behalf. Even if you're a manager, you're still also a subordinate to somebody, and if you want to be trusted enough to act on your boss's behalf, there are some rules that if you don't follow, you're going to become pretty frustrated by.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't learn how to be a good lieutenant, it doesn't matter how many organizations, how many times you try and climb up, be that second in command, become the next level within your organization, the managers or bosses that you work for, they're not going to help you with your growth as much as they could.
Yeah, so we're going to say captains and lieutenants only because if we were to say boss, subordinate, that's confusing. It's vocabulary we use for other things. And we want to be really clear here about what we're talking about. And it's a fun analogy also.
Yeah.
However, if you've been with us for a while, you may remember that our founders, Mark and Mike, were both lieutenants and then captains in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
So then you might think, oh, this comes from their experience in the Army. In fact, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of an organizational structure around bosses and subordinates. And these words are, you know, synonymous with other things. In terms of military references, those of us who are not in the military should not.
Yeah, like us.
Us. Shouldn't use the words or the term, I guess, chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people do. That is very military. Mm-hmm. Lots of people do, and it's inaccurate. Frankly, it has some baggage. Also, if you're in a matrix, there's not one. Good luck with that.
Yeah, try and figure that one out.
Command, which is often granted to captains, is a specific military term, which does not really translate. And also, you know, a chain of command kind of denotes like a clear path upward, which, again, matrix, not the case. If you're looking for a term to describe hierarchy in your organization, we recommend chain of authority.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more accurate. It really avoids the negatives many professionals mistakenly associate with the military. And the military is not the focus of this.
Yes,
exactly. Cast. So we're going to leave it aside now that we've assuaged everyone's concerns.
Totally.
The fact is, if you want to become a captain, which is to say an executive or a more senior manager.
Yeah.
Truly, y'all, and you know this because some of you are delivering really strongly on your jobs. It's not enough to just do your job. It's not enough to hit the numbers. It's not enough to achieve the results. If it was true that that was the case, the technical track in organizations, like that kind of like scientist level side path that people go along.
Yeah, totally.
It wouldn't exist.
Right.
Because oftentimes those people are doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
They are simply not in what we would describe as the chain of authority. And the chain of authority includes managing people, becoming an executive, a senior manager.
Yeah, requires humans.
Right.
With humans. There's so much human element that comes with leading people, which is why people pick that, right? That scientific, that technical track.
Yeah, they don't want to be managers.
Right. The lack of wanting to get into the human side or the human element of their organization. And being part of that human side of the organization means that there are political rules of thumb that we need to learn relative to our relationships with other people in the organization, most importantly, in this case, with our manager, our boss, the person that we work for. There are things that we need to do in order to be as effective as we possibly can with that person. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a lot of people listening to this that aren't going to love us saying play politics. And We understand that. We've got a whole podcast about politics. As we've said before, if you just want to do your job and not play politics, you'll not succeed as much as you could. And that's frustrating, especially for those people that don't like the idea of politics. But all human organizations have politics. And when we look upward in our organization, what the people at lower levels in the organization call politics is what the leaders in the organization actually call collaboration.
Yeah.
They call that relationships.
Right. They've realized.
Because it is at their level.
Well, yeah. And they've become comfortable with the fact, and maybe they were never exactly uncomfortable with the fact that organizations are made up of humans.
Yeah, it's humans.
Yeah. And y'all, there are many reasons why organizations can produce more than single humans, right? I mean, that's why we form organizations. That's why organizations exist.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this too is when I talk to people outside of work about their jobs, because when I talk to people at work, they talk about
non-manager tools people, you mean?
Right. Because they have, you know, people who listen have different questions for me. But when I talk to people in my personal life, for example, about their jobs, they don't talk to me about their work. They don't talk to me about the tasking they do. They don't talk about their spreadsheets. They don't talk about, oh, I did this, this, and this today at work. What they talk about is the people they work with.
That is such a good point.
People are more usually concerned with the human factor of their work. And we know that it's part of the deal. I think maybe some of us could get more comfortable with it, or just not more comfortable, but just accept.
Yeah,
accept that there are humans there, and that if you wanted a job without any politics at all, you would have to not exist.
Right. Or, I mean, you could start your own company that had only one employee for the entire duration of the company, and that only one person is you, so you don't have to deal with anybody. That's also an option.
What's funny about that is I think of the classic kind of like, oh, you could just code in your garage or something.
Mm-hmm.
Except there are people who invented websites in their garage, and now those people run multi-billion dollar organizations that employ other people.
Yeah.
Because you can't do it all. You can't do everything if the organization wants to grow. If you're comfortable with making the exact same widget over and over again for the exact same amount of money for the rest of your life, that's what that is. Because the bandwidth needed to produce a larger output and thus more revenue includes hiring other, unless what you produce is a robot whose level of capability is just the same as a human, I guess, maybe. And if that's your job, good job.
Right, good job.
Yeah.
Solid job, dude. Nice work.
In the real world.
That's the thing. Yeah, in the real world. So back to the real world, where all the rest of the people are. Politics, the vast majority of the time, are just relationship effects within the organization. Now, that's not to say, okay, so this is why people have, it gets a bad reputation, politics, because there are definitely some bad politics happening in some organizations.
Yeah.
Like colleagues undermining each other, whispering campaigns, fighting behind the scenes for power and budget. We're not going to pretend those things don't exist. Those kind of politics do exist and everywhere, but they're not the majority. They're absolutely not the majority. They're just what gets talked about internally and externally because they're more juicy, right? They're worthy of storytelling. They're the kind of politics that you want to share with your friends, not the kind that's about how two executives in your company got results. No one's telling Kate that. None of her friends are telling that story to us. Oh, you should have seen how these two executives worked together to get something done in my organization recently. Said no one ever.
Yeah.
That's dull and boring.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's only cool if you actually worked there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If like the compromises worked out great for both departments and then it made more money, like, that's the only time that's cool.
That's the only time that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's internally cool.
And it's not going to make the paper. So all that to say, don't shy away from politics. Recognize that there are completely ethical ways to have your relationship effects help your organization and you and your career.
Yeah. Relationship effects are so important. And the closer you get to the top of the organization, the more you realize that despite your increased power, role power is not the thing that makes the difference.
Exactly.
And if you're already a manager, you have some sense of this where you can ask your things of your directs and then 6 weeks later, you're frustrated because they're not happening.
Yeah.
Role power is not enough.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way to make people do what you need them to do. And oftentimes I think people imagine that role power is that.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's definitely not. When I'm in our effective manager conferences, sometimes I'll make a joke to the group. I'm like, it's not unusual that when we get role power for the very first time and we try and use it, we're like, wait, mine's broken. Can I have a new one? This doesn't work. I thought this would work. This isn't working. Yeah. Because role power isn't enough.
Right.
Role power isn't enough.
You need relationship power.
Yeah, totally.
Senior people, no matter how senior,
yeah,
rarely can get things done with only role power.
Yeah. If you think it's going to work better because you have more of it, you're wrong.
Yeah.
It doesn't work any better by using role power alone. It doesn't.
Yeah. Senior people, you know this already. Right? You have to get things done by working up and down and across the organization by talking to people, convincing them, you know, helping them understand. It's relationship power that you're leveraging when you have role power that goes along with it. The thing is that one of the fundamental problems for many professionals as they pursue greater responsibility, which
and
often includes pay
and authority. And authority, all those things. Yeah, exactly. All the things that come with greater authority.
Right. And some of those things are the things we get excited about.
Yeah.
But as professionals pursue these things, they focus only on their role power.
Mm-hmm.
That role power, you'll discover, diminishes in importance relative to relationship power over the course of your career. Also because at some point you can't get any more of it.
Yeah, exactly. And at some point you're topped out.
Even if it did work, it would run out.
Yeah.
Right? You can only force people into a set of behaviors for so long before suddenly, you know, then that's when we say, oh, that person's a tyrant. So you only have so much role power and you can only get so much.
You might have noticed that the end of the year is quickly approaching. What that means is we've got about 7 public conferences in person left before the end of the year. And in fact, only one of our virtual effective manager conferences is left and not yet sold out. If you are in Toronto, Ontario, Chicago, Illinois, Jersey City, San Diego, Melbourne, Australia, Silicon Valley, or DC, you might want to consider joining us. You can register today at manager-tools.com/training. If we're going to be talking and then about relationships, we need to reiterate a fundamental principle that exists in all of the organizations, in all the hierarchical, I should say, organizations. That is, the most important relationship anyone has in the organization is the one they have with their boss, which is why this series of casts exists, which is why we're writing this series of casts and we're on chapter 1. That is, this is all about being a good lieutenant. That is, making the relationship between ourselves and the person we work for as strong as we possibly can. And it goes beyond results and it goes into relationships. And it's not that hard to have an excellent relationship with your boss if you know what to do, if you know what those levers are and the areas in which you can focus your time and your effort. That's what we're talking about here. Starting with
know your boss's goals. I will say one thing.
Yeah.
Some people listening may have not a super positive relationship with their boss. Like some people who are listening may have been hitting their results for a really long time. You're working really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you work for someone with whom your relationship is not ideal.
Yep.
When we say this isn't hard, what we mean is implementing the guidance we're going to give is not difficult.
Yes.
It does not necessarily mean that it's easy to get over the negativity of the relationship.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
sometimes the hardest thing, knowing the answer, like sometimes you know the answer, you know what you need to do, you know it's possible, and your relationship is, I mean, I've not had this with a boss. I've had it though with like a peer where, you know, I used to work with this person. Our relationship was not ideal and I was chapped about it. I did not.
Oh, for sure.
I knew what to do.
We've all had that, no? I think we've all had it. Right. And you're, to your point, you knew what to do.
I knew what to do. And I knew what to do. I had to do it. And I knew he didn't know what to do.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that I could fix it. And to be totally honest, I didn't want to.
I know. You don't want to. I know. It's the hard part. That's the hard part is convincing yourself, okay, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. And
yeah, I agree.
My motivation for it, if you're looking for that, y'all, came from what I view as my professional obligation to the organization. I see it as part of my responsibility to help to make the company successful. And that meant having a good relationship with this person because he and I were on a lot of like project and like contract teams together. So we had to interface well. I don't think he knew that our relationship wasn't, that I didn't find it good.
It's often that way.
So it really is, it really was up to me because I don't think he was aware. Also though, it's always up to you. If you're listening, the only person whose behavior you can control is your own. And sometimes that means you know what to do and the hardest thing to get over is yourself.
Yeah, you got to get out of your own way some days.
Exactly. You got to get over your own self and your own ego. Mm-hmm. So,
agreed.
If you can do that, then the first step is to know your boss's goals.
Absolutely. Exactly. One of the biggest, I would say, limitations on lieutenants not serving their bosses well is their boss's lack of communication to their directs on what the boss's goals are. Now, note that we said that the problem is not that you don't know what their goals are, rather that those goals haven't been communicated to you. And we know that the majority of folks listening to this, at least 2/3, if not more people, or directs generally, don't know what their boss's goals are. We have a podcast to help you suss out, surmise what your boss's goals are. Mm-hmm. And we know that that's usually not your fault. Most people's bosses don't do a very good job of communicating their goals to the folks on their team.
Yeah.
And it is the role of the manager to communicate to their directs what the goals are, and many just don't do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, don't feel like you're a lone ranger out there if you don't know your boss's goals. Welcome to the rest of us.
Yeah, this is something—
all of us.
And I don't know if you talk about, Sarah, but I do end up talking about this, something similar to this when we talk about results in conferences and in trainings because some people don't even know, like it's not clear what your results are meant to be.
Yeah, agreed.
Some people—
yes, I find that often.
Your metrics are not clear to you. They're not well-defined. Mm-hmm. And two things. One, you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And the anxiety around not knowing is unnecessary.
Yeah.
Two, it may not be your fault. It may be a shift. It may be your team is new. It may be that your company went through a pandemic. However, this is a great— well, we're recording this in the fall of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
If it is for you right now that you're listening and the fall of 2022, it is a great time to figure out your results, what they're meant to be, because it's close to the end of the year. So you could come up with some metrics and kind of couch them as not, I don't know what my results are meant to be, more something along the lines of, hey, this is what I'm thinking for next year should be the goals of my team. So if you don't know, and it's October, start making a list and run it by your boss. And when you do, ask her, hey, what are your goals? You know, I'd love to support you. What are your goals? I'd like to set these goals. Do they support yours? Can we collaborate? If somebody came to me with that, I would be so excited.
Like, thank you.
I would be so excited.
You. Even if they're wrong, I don't even care if you're fully, fully wrong.
No.
I'm like, thank you. That gives me a jumping point. That gives your boss somewhere to start in the creation of your goals and makes them much more likely to do it.
Yeah.
Folks, what we're saying is don't do what the vast majority of professionals out there do, and to no, by no fault of their own, but that is many people simply accept that they don't know their boss's goals and think that that's how it's supposed to be. Because when this happens to you 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 times by 10 different bosses, it's not unusual that you begin to believe that's the way it's supposed to be. I'm not supposed to know my boss's goals. I've never known any of my boss's goals. And
yeah,
hey,
it turns the norm.
Out none of my peers, exactly, none of my peers know their boss's goals either. No one I know knows their boss's goals. Maybe this is how it's supposed to be. No, firmly, this is not how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to have your boss's goals.
This is another situation where your boss got to their position in the same way that you got to yours. You know, you're hitting your metrics, you're hitting your results, and you don't really maybe know what you're doing. And guess what? There's a solid chance your boss doesn't know what they're
yes,
doing.
That. Mm-hmm.
Most people learn management. They learned how to be successful from someone they worked with. And hopefully they had a good mentor. That's how people find us, though. They don't know. They're, you know, new to management. They don't know what to do. And so It's not supposed to be this way. Well, actually, I don't know that what we'd put in it, but it'd be a great for the is this normal series? Like, is this normal? I don't know my boss's goals. Yes, it's normal. It should not be. Bosses should be sharing their goal all the time.
They're supposed to be.
Yeah. They should be talking about it constantly. Yeah. And your instincts, y'all, around wanting to know your boss's goals is because you want to be able to make intelligent decisions in situations of ambiguity. And so your instincts about it are correct.
Yes,
the reason you want that is because you want to be able to make smart choices when you're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so even if our boss hasn't shared her goals, and we have a cast for that, it's called Leader's Intent.
Yeah.
You can use the goals of your manager to infer intent, where they want to focus, how they want us to behave in achieving intent and goals. So They don't have to use our CAS like leader's intent. If we have their goals, can decide like what is their intention, where's their focus. It's helpful for us. And it's a little bit, it always kind of reminds me of the OKR discussion, like objectives and key results. Like, okay, if I know what the goal is and I've got three things that I have to decide between working on, if two of them don't contribute to the goal, guess what? We're not working on those things.
Exactly.
It's a good way for people to make decisions about where they should spend their time. And if we have our own set of goals, which again, it's that it might be that time of year and we have our bosses, then we have double the security around how we're spending our time, which is—
You're absolutely right.
So helpful.
I think— So many professionals that I talk to report that they feel as though their work life is just running from fire to fire. Just running from fire to fire. It's just, it's a constant barrage of messages, changing focus from one thing to the other and one thing to the other and one thing to the other. And goals is the way, is one of the ways to stop that. Because in that moment, when there's a fire, you can ask yourself, is that more important than the thing I'm doing now in respect to the goals? Yes or no? If it's a no, okay, that thing can probably wait. I got to do this thing.
Also, if you have good lieutenants, they can work on it while you're working on the other thing.
Right?
So it's— It's just—
Goal clarity.
Goal
helpful.
Clarity. Super, super crucial. And it's that time of year.
Exactly. So for those of us, because many of you, to our earlier points, don't have those goals, what do we do if our boss hasn't shared their goals? We don't just blame our boss and whine and say, you were supposed to give me the goals. Why don't I have the goals? Instead, we go and find out. Going back to the purpose of our podcast today, you can't count yourself a good lieutenant if your boss doesn't share their goals with you and you just throw up your hands and say, whatever, I don't have the goals. I don't even know what I'm supposed to be working on over here. I don't have the goals and that's your fault and I'm going to do nothing about it. I mean, you're welcome to blame your boss if you want, but when you don't help them achieve their goals, they're not going to blame themselves for your lack of helpfulness. They're going to blame you for not figuring out what those goals were and adjusting.
Yeah, definitely. They're not going to be the ones who get in trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. You should have figured it out, dude. It's my fault, but you should have figured it out. Figure it out. Thanks so much for listening today, folks. We'll be back next week with a continuation of today's topic.